This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
There's something infuriating, almost laughable, about being told something you've been hearing about for decades simply never existed. You know, there's the Mandela effect that we've all heard of, where the idea that Mr. Mandela had died years ago in the jungle and was not actually still alive. Wait, I didn't know that happened. Tiananmen Square, Kazam, Jiffy, peanut butter. It's Jif. Choosy mom choose Jif, not Jiffy. But they're Skippy. But wasn't there Jiffy? And yeah, Sinbad was in that movie, wasn't he? But the Jeffrey Epstein list? That's not one that's a figment of our imagination. There ain't no Mandela affecting the Jeffrey Epstein list. But that's what the government would like you to believe. The Jeffrey Epstein client list. You've seen it referenced in headlines, court filings, public interviews, even by government officials who claimed it was sitting on their desk. Now they're telling us it was all a misunderstanding. It was a mirage, nothing to see here. And yet, we've had the flight logs, had the infamous black book. We've seen the names, allegedly. We've watched victims come forward. We've watched Ghislaine Maxwell get convicted of trafficking minors. And apparently, no one's on that list. Because, you know, she's trafficking them to no one. And through it all, that mythical list, the one people assumed would expose the true scale of Epstein's operation, has hovered just out of reach every single time we get close. Now, the Department of Justice says it simply doesn't exist. So is it true, or is this just bureaucratic sleight of hand? Today, I sit down with someone who's navigated both sides of the courtroom, defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. He's someone who's built cases, read sealed indictments, and knows exactly how governments wordsmith their way around uncomfortable truths. We're talking real-world prosecutions, the threshold for naming high-profile suspects, and what might actually be buried beneath that avalanche of redactions and ongoing investigations. This isn't about conspiracy theories. It's about contradictions, about transparency, about a man like Epstein and how a man like Epstein could run a decades-long criminal enterprise with powerful people following in and out of his orbit, and the government still manages to come back with the, sorry, we've got nothing. We'll get into whether the list was ever meant to be a list at all. Was it a flight manifest, a set of text messages, a sealed binder labeled co-conspirators that quietly disappeared under political pressure? What exactly qualifies as a client, and what happens when that definition gets blurred just enough to protect the right people? And maybe most critically, who benefits from denying the list ever existed in the first place? So let's set aside the smoke and the mirrors and start pulling at the legal threads that still remain. Because if anyone can break down what the system could reveal versus what it chose to hide, it's someone who's seen the machinery from both sides. Which brings me to the question that's kicking all of this off. When you hear the phrase Epstein list, Eric, how have you always interpreted what's actually on it?
You know, it's a little hard to say, you know, whether Epstein had sort of created his own list, some sort of little black book that he had that the government got. That is, of course, disputed. You know, whether the government received information and created their own list, sort of synthesized evidence from different investigations and put together something for themselves. That is also disputed. It seems unusual that just no one would know any other participants or players in this sort of decades-long sex trafficking ring.
Well, I think we need to define, I mean, what is the list? I mean, that's, I think, a big thing, too. Is the list some list that he has that he had in a black book of taking notes of all of the people? Is it just names of people that were in his black book? Is it a flight log of people coming to and from the island and how long they were there? Is it literally a blackmail list of so-and-so was with so-and-so and so-and-so and their pet golden retriever, which makes it really freaky and weird, list that he can then, you know, go off on people with. When you hear the list, how have you always interpreted?
You know, in my experience, a criminal who is engaging in decades-long criminal activity like sex trafficking, they're not necessarily going to have like a handwritten list on some, you know, paper at home that says, hey, person number one is this guy, person number two is this gal. That seems pretty unusual. I doubt that it exists in that kind of a form. That being said, throughout the numerous investigations and court cases involving Jeffrey Epstein and affiliates, Ghislaine Maxwell, namely as one of them, the government certainly received information about alleged other participants and possibly accomplices. And so in my appraisal, that's more what the list could be, is sort of the government's synthesis of different evidence and who was involved allegedly in these misdeeds.
Yeah, I hear you there. I've always taken it as like a flight log. So look, we know that exists. There's no disputing a flight log exists. Why don't we have that? I mean, if this is the list to go to that's how I thought of the list as. It's like, okay, well, who was on the plane? Were they there for like a day? Were they there for a week? I think that would be very telling as to what went on now that we know what went on that island. But I guess, you know, is the government playing loose with the words here, really, of just like the list? Oh, you meant that list, this other list. And oh, we thought you meant that. Like, I don't know, because this seems a little bizarre because they're not even defining what the list even is exactly.
Yeah, you know, when certain politicians and administrations want to use it to their benefit, they're all gung-ho about talking about the list. But then when they're pressed on it, the details are kind of scarce. You know, what I think is that there are flight logs, there are certainly texts, emails, different communications. And my apprehension is the government put that together and said, hey, here's sort of a master document that discusses Jeffrey Epstein and everything that went on and other folks involved. It incorporates like a flight list, text messages, emails, witness testimony, that kind of thing. And I'm not aware of any law that would prevent the government from disclosing that.
It's why would they not want to disclose it, I think, is the bigger question, and why we're all sitting here wondering what is going on. I mean, could this list have been sealed under protective order or a grand jury secrecy? I mean, and even if so, I mean, it would still exist. But would the government have to recognize its existence if that were the case?
You know, I'm not aware of any legal requirement for the government to tell the truth, and they sometimes don't. Even if it was sort of under seal or under protective order, that wouldn't be forever. It wouldn't be indefinite. And it wouldn't give the government grounds to say it actually doesn't exist. I think if the government was being truthful, they would have to say, hey, it does exist, but it is under sort of a protective order. But that wouldn't exist forever. There's no legal mechanism by which you can say, hey, keep this a secret forever.
Well, completely. And depending on what kind of log or list this is and who's on it is going to play a big part in if it ever actually comes out. What sort of incentive does the government have to even put this thing out, especially if it has a lot of people's names on it? I mean, obviously, there's the let's protect people that have been abused, but Epstein's dead. And you just have a list of people who came and went from that island. And, you know, unless you got proof of something they did, it's like going to a Diddy party. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I was there. There's pictures, but you can't prove I did anything. I mean, is this really almost like that, but with less evidence?
Yeah, that's kind of my take on it. as well. And in terms of incentives, you know, governmental transparency, a lot of politicians have campaigned on this and in fact said, hey, we're going to give transparency to the people. Kash Patel, director of the FBI, had talked about that even in his judicial confirmation hearings, our Senate confirmation hearings. And so, you know, there's a transparency issue, but there's also, you know, we want to protect alleged victims and such, but I think that could be done while still disclosing some information in which the public has an interest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't honestly know, I mean, how much the government is truly interested in protecting any of the victims in this. I mean, considering looking at what we've seen, Ms. Guffrey the other day died, you know, and that could have, there was a lot of factors, you know, supposedly at play there. But, you know, it's another person who had information, who was very outspoken, who disappeared, or didn't really kind of went off into her own world and seemingly had a very hard time doing that. So I don't know how much, you know, obviously on the surface, that's what the public would like. But when it comes to protecting all of these human beings who have so much power, who may have been involved in this, that's the scary prospect of what's the bigger importance here in terms of continuity, maybe, of government. How does a prosecutor decide whether to charge the powerful third parties in this? I mean, the DOJ said no uncharged individuals had sufficient evidence against them. I mean, that's obviously for them to judge. But if the public ever saw a list of the evidence there, that may be up for argument.
Yeah, you know, I question the government's representation on that. In terms of charging decisions, really what a prosecutor looks at is, hey, is there an applicable criminal charge? Do I have sufficient evidence to bring the charge? So the threshold for that is probable cause. It's a low standard. It's pretty easy to meet probable cause. The prosecutor also has to, you know, decide, hey, can I ultimately prove this at trial? Do I have a reasonable belief that I could do that? And then lastly, are there any sort of policy considerations for whom we are potentially charging? But we got to make sure we're not doing this on a selective basis where, hey, you know, this guy is buddies with a big politician, so we're not going to charge him. And this guy I don't like, so we are going to charge him. Those considerations cannot come into play.
Is that what makes
this?
Not. I mean, well, should not, sure. But is that what makes this maybe so difficult? Of if you started picking and choosing who you're going to charge on this thing, the public's going to, what's the whole damn list? You can't just say, well, this one's on there, but no, we can't tell you who else is, because that gets to be very, very cherry picking. I mean, they shouldn't do that. They can't technically do that, but they sure would do that, I would imagine. But maybe it's easier just to say there is no list, so they don't have to deal with that who else is on this thing fiasco that would ensue, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think that at this point, the administration is trying to kind of keep it quiet. You know, Pam Bondi, the attorney general, came in guns ablaze and she said, hey, we're going to be transparent. This is Epstein release one. And she released these binders to these influencers. And lo and behold, it was pretty underwhelming. It was a lot of stuff that the public already had. In fact, almost all of it had already been publicly disclosed. And so now they've done about face where they're kind of like saying, hey, there's no list. There's not really much else we're going to give you. And so what's the reason for that 180?
Well, and what's the reason, too? I mean, I found it very interesting where they've been talking about this list forever and they were all so proud. And the one made the cover sheet and then put a bunch of blank pages behind it. Look, we all have a list. And there was no list that they were holding up for everyone. But the fact that they were talking about having a list, we got the list, it's on my desk, the list, and now they're walking it back. And look, I'm not being political here, but then you have Trump jumping in that cabinet room conversation going, you guys are still asking about Jeffrey Epstein? Like, of course people are. That's so old news. Like, yeah, because you're on the fucking list. And you have Elon Musk saying he's on the list. You know, their former, you know, the former buddies there. And yeah, I mean, it seems very convenient. This damn thing is just suddenly poof up in smoke and never existed. Seems like kind of a crazy thing to say. I think I might stick with, I'm just not going to release it. But for it to be non-existent, I mean, are we going to see somebody? Is this going to come back up? What's going to happen from here? Are people going to dig? Can anyone reveal the existence of this list?
You know, if it happens, I think it would probably have to be someone who is on the inside or formerly on the inside. And so, as you mentioned, Elon Musk claims to have some kind of knowledge about additional information regarding the Jeffrey Epstein investigation that has not been disclosed and that has been arguably, according to some, withheld by the government. And so, you know, there has to be more information that has been disclosed. I've reviewed what's been disclosed. And just in criminal investigations, we're talking about federal resources. We're talking about more money than God. All these investigators, there's got to be witness statements. There's got to be photos, interviews, perhaps video, all of which are most of which the public has not seen.
So here we are after years of whispers, leaks, and political posturing, we're told flatly. The Epstein client list doesn't exist. Not that it's sealed, not that it's classified, just that it was never a thing to begin with. And maybe legally that's technically true. But if you listen closely to the conversation with Eric Faddis, you heard something that was far more revealing than any redacted PDF or empty binder. You heard the anatomy of how truth is managed, sliced, buried, and rebranded, depending on who's in the room. You heard a seasoned prosecutor explain how evidence gets synthesized, how powerful names quietly disappear from criminal narratives, and how legal definitions are stretched just enough to sidestep accountability. Because here's the thing, no one's asking for a handwritten client list volume one found in Epstein's sock drawer. People are asking why a man convicted of trafficking minors to others somehow left behind no others, no buyers, no names, just a rotating cast of VIPs in a black book and a dead billionaire who took the whole network with him to the grave. It's not a conspiracy to say the government isn't eager to out the full scope of this operation. Just a pattern. We've seen it bait and switch before. Pam Bondi promising transparency, waving around those shiny white binders, only for them to be packed with already public files. And then the pivot. Actually, there was no list. That's not a revelation. That's damage control. What we didn't fully get into here was what's worth sitting with. Is the power vacuum that Epstein's death created, without a living defendant to cross-examine, to squeeze, to name names in court, the narrative becomes whatever the government says it is. And that list, it becomes just vague enough to deny. And maybe that's the point. You can't cherry pick from a list that doesn't exist. You can't demand justice from people who were never officially named. So here's the takeaway. This isn't about one document. It's about a system that protects itself. Something we all knew. It's about a decades-long failure to confront institutional rot and to carefully choreographed silence that follows. If you're still asking the questions, good. Keep asking them, because history shows us that when powerful people want a story to go away, the last thing they'll give you is a name. What are your thoughts? Let me know in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already on YouTube, check us out there. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to join in those conversations. If you're on the podcast platforms, hit subscribe there as well so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage on this case and all the cases that we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Very much looking forward to what you have to say on the comment section on YouTube. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.